Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state continues to watch a wildfire burning near Chena Hot Springs. Division of Forestry spokesperson Tim Mowry says the Munson Creek Fire, which started by lightning on June 18th, continues to burn in the Chena River State Recreation Area south of the Hot Springs. Mowry says the fire has grown, but is still far from threatening the Hot Springs Resort or homes along the last stretch of Chena Hot Springs Road.
It is moving sort of northeast toward but away from the Hot Springs. Still, you know, 3-4 miles away from the Hot Springs, estimated at about 500 acres. And it'll be active for the next couple of days when the temperatures are going to get up into the 80s.
Mowry says the state will reassess the situation if the wildfire gets to a ridgeline behind the Hot Springs. And he notes that all area structures have been assessed and there's a plan to protect them. The Angel Rocks Trail remains open, but the next section of trail to Chena Hot Springs is closed as a precaution. The search continues for a Fort Yukon man who fell into the Yukon River last week. An Alaska State Trooper missing persons bulletin says 42-year-old Samson Peter III was thrown from a boat that hit a sandbar 12 miles upriver from Fort Yukon June 25th. Debbie McCarty is one of numerous community volunteers supporting the search, which has many boats on the water.
Dragging the river, there are quite a few boats searching from like 17 mile up the Yukon down to, there were some boats down about 4 and 8 mile down river and just kind of all in between.
McCarty says strong winds hampered the search Tuesday and yesterday and that the river is running high. She says locals and people from other area villages are helping with the on-water effort as well as supporting the operation from shore.
Everybody's helping. We're cooking and somebody's here 24 hours a day.
McCarty says local agencies have provided over $5,000 in gas for search boats and that bottled water and food have been donated from Fairbanks. A Fairbanks man has been found guilty of murder. A State Department of Law release says a Fairbanks judge found 23-year-old Ryder Smith guilty of second-degree murder for the November 2019 shooting death of Peter Horace Wright. It says Smith previously waived his right to a jury trial, opting instead for a ruling by a judge. Smith's sentencing is scheduled for October 28th. He faces between 15 and 99 years in prison. It was the first felony trial held in Fairbanks since the Alaska Supreme Court suspended jury trials in March of 2020. DNA has led to resolution of another cold case in Alaska. Ketchikan police have made an arrest in a rape case from 28 years ago. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, police credit a recent push to test evidence from a backlog of sexual assault kits in the state.
On a dark evening in January 1993, a 14-year-old girl noticed a man following her. Afterward, she told investigators that he had pulled her behind the dugouts at Ketchikan High School's baseball field and raped her. She told police the man threatened to kill her if she said anything about the assault. She called the police anyway. But Ketchikan's acting deputy police chief, Andy Berenson, says the assailant was a stranger, making the investigation much more difficult.
Just weren't able to get anywhere with that investigation.
Now, police say they've cracked the case with new DNA evidence. Michael J. Williams, a 52-year-old Saxman man, is accused of raping the unnamed teenager on Dudley Field. Williams faces two charges, first-degree sexual assault and second-degree sexual abuse of a minor. He has not yet entered a plea. As part of the initial investigation, medical professionals collected samples from the survivor's body in a sexual assault kit. Some 11 years later, in 2004, after advances in DNA forensics, KPD's Berenson says that sexual assault kit was tested at the Alaska State Crime Lab.
To the point where they could actually develop a full, genetic profile.
While police say the sample did turn up male DNA, it didn't match any profiles in the FBI's database. A dead end. Another 17 years passed. Then, this year, Berenson says a years-old DNA sample collected by another law enforcement agency was tested as part of a statewide push. The named suspect in that case was Michael Williams. And there was a hit. That DNA was similar to the sample collected in the 1993 Dudley Field case, according to court filings. After getting a search warrant, Berenson says he took a sample from Williams last week, and it matched the 1993 profile. Williams was arrested the next day. Berenson says it's the first time in his 20-year career he's seen an arrest in a case this cold in Ketchikan. He says a recent push by the Alaska legislature to test backlogged sexual assault kits around the state made it possible. A preliminary hearing in the case is scheduled for Friday. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The state announced another three Alaska resident COVID-19 deaths yesterday. The Department of Health and Social Services reported that a woman in her 50s from the Prince of Wales Hyder census area, a Wasilla man in his 80s, and an Anchorage man in his 70s all recently died from COVID. Alaska's pandemic-long known COVID death toll is now 370. As the pandemic begins to fade, the University of Alaska Museum of the North is collecting artifacts representative of Alaska's experience. KiwiC's Robin reports.
Angela Lin is Senior Collections Manager at the University of Alaska Museum of the North.
I have to always be thinking like 20 years, 40 years from now, what are people going to want to know about this crazy experience that we've all just gone through?
She wants to seize this moment while people are still living it.
For future generations, you know, that's what we always have to think about for museums. It's not what stories speak to me right now. It's what are people in the future, what will they find interesting and compelling enough to do research or put together an exhibit on this stuff?
She thought the Museum of the North should have some items about the pandemic in its permanent collection. As her idea came together earlier this spring, she reached out to public health officials, including Dr. Ann Zink, Alaska's chief medical officer, who gave her some ideas.
Oh, it would have been awesome if I could have gotten like the first box of the first vaccine, you know, that came into the state.
Lynn connected with Lynine Livingston with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Livingston is the public information officer for the Joint Incident Command for Interior Alaska. At a mass vaccination clinic held at the Carlson Center in Fairbanks earlier this spring, Livingston was able to collect quite a few artifacts.
A Moderna box, there was a Johnson & Johnson vial, a couple of Pfizer vials, some stickers, some blank vaccination cards, all provided to me by public health.
Other people suggested to Lynn that she look at the do-it-yourself response that Alaskans put together as the pandemic widened, such as hand-sewn headbands and 3D-printed mask hooks, and the different plexiglass creations businesses came up with to keep their employees safe. Lynn is looking for iconic things, symbolic things.
Different things that people were doing for like Zoom squares as Halloween costumes or, you know, some of these out of the world things.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The COVID-19 pandemic has driven a lot of people to attend online classes. And while the University of Alaska has offered distance delivery for decades, UAF in particular has a nationwide reputation as an e-learning leader. UAF's eCampus Executive Director Owen Guthrie told the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce this week that while other institutions lost students, UAF held steady and even increased enrollment in business classes.
The school management was up about 12% last fall because a lot of employees took the opportunity to say, hey, if I'm going to be home all the time anyway, I'm going to work on getting some new skills or upskilling within my current role.
UAF's new Corporate Enrollment Officer for e-learning, Teresa Thompson, encouraged local business owners to invest in what she called world-class instruction at UAF for their workers.
Now more than ever, following the pandemic, employees will be seeking meaning in their jobs. According to LinkedIn's 2019 Workforce Learning Report, 94% of employees said they would stay at a company longer if it simply invested in them learning.
Thompson listed UAF eCampus offerings, including applied management, strategic leadership, cybersecurity, and security and disaster management. Guthrie says there are also more traditional programs.
Some new courses coming out of the School of Engineering. We have one of the only bachelors of science and biology available fully online.
Of special interest to business owners, Guthrie noted UAF's eCampus offers shorter 10-week-long classes that lead to a master's degree in business administration. And Dan Bross.